This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri. Minnie Bruce Pratt has written an exquisite book of poems about the death and illness of her beloved partner. And it has been so long since I've heard Minnie Bruce's voice. She's going to give us an opening poem. Here's Minnie Bruce Pratt.
Thank you, Grace. Blue Moon. The trees creak overhead, squeaky doors pushed forth and back in the wind. On the porch, we watch the moon rising from whisper to guess to peach, white, then blue. Once in a blue moon, a love like this comes along. We weren't standing alone. Lots of people, a room vast with politics and that ex-lover playing catch my eye. You read us a story, the one who had been you. A past, the one who had been me. Your torn shirt, my needle's eye. Mm. We had been alone. We had read what the other had asked. The light shone on the pages, your face up tilted in the glare. Glory, mirror, future. Later, I knew you were looking up at me. I knew you. You knew me. We looked at each other, shining on each other, shining on sun, sailing on moon.
That's her voice, Minnie Bruce Pratt. What is the title of this book and what's in it?
Well, it's called Magnified. I'm going to hold it up again so everybody can see it. I started writing the poems when my partner, Leslie Feinberg, who eventually became my spouse, although we were married long before it was legal. I started writing it when she started getting much sicker. She'd been very ill at different times when we were together, but she got much sicker. And it was hard, as everyone who knows, and a lot more people now because of the pandemic know, how hard it is when someone you love is really ill. I would go out every day to find a poem for myself. I would just take a half an hour and I'd go walk around the neighborhood and look for something, really anything, just a phrase, something. And I'd make up something while I walked, and I'd come back and I'd write a draft down. And that was all I usually had time for, was a draft. Mm.
The one who had been you, the one who had been you. You know, I hold a lot of books in my hands, and this one just wins the prize. Wesleyan did such a job with this book physically. The feel of it, the paper, the aesthetics, the recurring water theme that's illustrated. Really, people cannot get the whole of it, but it is a work of art. Did you have something to do with it?
I had some things to do with it. The cover was my choice. The cover, well, there were several different choices, but really it was my choice. And this is a photograph by Leslie Feinberg. Leslie, we went to Niagara Falls. She was born in Buffalo. And very early one morning, and she hung over the edge of Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. I held onto her belt so she wouldn't fall in. And she took the picture of the edge of the falls. It's the edge of the falls and the mist down below. Everybody can see that. And before I tell people that, I ask them to guess what it is. And people say, a faceted stone. Very seldom do they guess water, but sometimes.
Oh, I do think it looks oceanic, you know, but it is a work. It is a work of art. I'm so glad you have it. Well, lead us on into the book with another poem from Magnified.
So the poem I just read, Blue Moon, is right at the beginning. And this is the next poem immediately after it. And it really is about beginning to grapple with death. The Great Swamp. That spring, you and I leaned over the edge, staring into the swamp. What was in there? amphibian eyes glinting like treasure in the water. Gold dots of pollen flecking a sodden carpet. That spring we saw you were beginning to die. The arrowhead leaves flew slowly up green out of the murky water. You got sick and sicker. We leaned. Our shadows reached into the water. We looked down into the mud past where we'd seen to where what could be lived, waiting to come.
Waiting to come. Before we go further into the deeper into the book, I want to talk about you a minute, because I've been watching your career for a very long time. And I think we were on WPFW when I think Crime Against Nature came out, but I'm not really quite sure. But I want to get everyone to know who you are. You were born in Selma, Alabama. And am I right to say that if you were born in such a racist place that this sparks the mini Bruce Pratt who tries to change the world every day?
Well, it didn't spark it immediately, because I was raised under segregation as a white girl. I was born in Selma because it was the nearest hospital. So it's a conjunction of being born under segregation and being born in what was still really a very rural place, Alabama.
I bet.
Most of Alabama at the time. It was the nearest hospital, and I grew up in Centerville, where I still have a home, and I spend part of my time there as well. You know, the journey that I took to become the person that I am really was the product of the great liberation movement.
Oh, yes. And you were instrumental in women's liberation in 1971 or something in North Carolina.
In North Carolina, yeah. I remember the first time I ever marched in the streets. There were about six of us. And we marched down Hay Street in Fayetteville, North Carolina for Women's Equality Day.
And all of your books are about destroying old forms to create new ones. I just wanted to say, I think you have won about 10 awards. One of your books is called Crime Against Nature. And that is when you were first put on the map with that book. And it was about being a lesbian mother and losing her sons, the custody of her sons, because it was illegal.
In North Carolina. Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Well, everywhere, actually.
Yes. That book was absolutely groundbreaking. When you look back of it, what do you think about that book?
Well, you know, I tried to understand what was happening when it was happening, because the publisher, Nancy Bariano, Firebrand Books, was part of the Women's and Lesbian Publishing Network, which was formed originally because nobody would publish our work because it was considered pornographic because it was lesbian. In fact, I was with a collective in North Carolina, the Feminary Collective, and when we took our copy to the printers in Durham, they wouldn't print it because it was lesbian. So,
you know,
I mean, it was an uphill battle.
But the young women born who are in college now really do not know this history as well as they should. They do not really understand what you've gone through.
No, although it's coming back around now in the South, and I think people are beginning to understand that there is a deep vein of hatred and ignorance that was promulgated, was inculcated way back at the beginning. I mean, the South was the home of slavery, enslavement, I should say, enslavement of people. And so all the institutions formed by the white establishment were meant to keep people in ignorance, right? And hating each other, basically. So that's what I came out of. And, you know, it's interesting that to me, this Nature won that award because of at least two, perhaps three of the judges decided to fight for it. Because I found out much later that my publisher actually sent the manuscript to a friend of mine who was a poet and said to her, "Is this really poetry?"
And it won the Le Mans Poetry Award, didn't it?
It did. And I think the question was there because it was so idiomatic. It used language that wasn't poetic language. I actually used the word lesbian in the poems. I was part of a movement that was breaking those barriers.
Yeah, did the movement give you courage? Were you not afraid? Were you often afraid? Ever?
Well, you know.
To be hurt. Afraid to be hurt.
No. I was hurt. Took my children away. There was nothing left after that. I mean, I could be hurt in different ways. I could not be hired for jobs. I could not be nominated for prizes. But those things weren't important. I was fighting for social change and ultimately for some kind of profound revolution because that had happened to me. And I tell you, Grace, I was raised in privilege as a white girl, not in economic privilege. We didn't have money, but we had my family was on both sides. They were settler colonialists. They were enslavers on both sides. And so the consciousness of like, this is, you know, I live here. This is me. This is my life had never really been touched until I came out. And then I learned what happened to you if you cross the line, if you touch the electric fence they put up around you. I learned what happened. And I understood which side I was on, and it was not the side of the people who took away the children or who were racist or who were ableist or who were anti-Indigenous or, you know, or who were anti-worker. I understood what side I was on.
Oh, and you and your partner, Leslie Feinberg, were workers in the world of change every day of your life. And so is this book. So please go back to Magnified, which has been called Dixonian. The poetry has been Dixonian. Here you come from a place where they said, is her poetry even poetry? And now they are giving it the greatest accolades possible. And Magnitude is what Dickinson was about.
So I'm going to read a couple of poems. The first one is called Saved Voice Messages. The automated voice says 21 days to erase. All of your calls are filed into the cyber drawer. The one about the eagle, the ones about the snow, the miner's strike, Mumia, student protests in Arizona. The one when you say, don't mind that, Aaron, come home and get loved up. Huh. The one when you hope the bus ride wasn't rough. You fold all your electromagnetic energy into the digital envelope and send yourself to me. The last one when you sound so sick. I hit save, 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 but I can't save everything. Today, I have 11 messages of us traveling through time together when there is yet no end. And then an extension of that desire to keep living on with the one you love, the tornado. You and I saw the storm coming up the valley. It made a precipice, and from there, it fell on us. At the storm edge, a couplet of wind fragments, side by side, inbound and outbound velocities tried to clasp each other. Then a whirl into oblivion, the only evidence of existence, a cloud of debris. Beauty into nothingness. You say, let's step back from the window. You clasp my hand. What will be left of us? Bits of sound and matter, exhorting voices inside the whirlwind, saying the end is not destruction, saying two is not the answer, saying revolution is bigger than both of us. Revolution is a science that infers the future presence of us.
Yes. Two souls who are inseparable. I wonder if two people can love each other so totally if they're different politically. I don't think so. But you were really together. Dylan Thomas says, after the first death, there is no other. And I had the strangest belief feeling when I read this book that this was the first death I ever felt. You make us feel this is the first death we've ever known. Now, how do you explain that? I do not know how primal you got into your language to make us feel that way. Tell us a little bit about Leslie Feinberg.
Oh, gosh, I could talk forever.
He was a historian.
Well, yes, and I guess the first thing I should talk about is pronouns. Thank you. That was really helpful because Leslie was a person who thought deeply and deeply about the relation between sex and gender. Leslie identified explicitly at the end of her life in the obituary that we wrote together as female, Jewish, working class, communist, writer, historian, transgender. And Leslie spent, and so Leslie and I used female pronouns with each other. We were lesbian lovers. But also, I was in many different social situations with Leslie. And depending on the gender and sex of the people in the grouping with us, people related to her differently.
I wish you'd write more about that.
Well, I have written a little bit, but you know...
You do have a nonfiction piece.
And that's right. And if people want to know more about this, that it's S/HE, all capitals. And it really is about my understanding the complexity of sex and gender as I came to know Leslie. But Leslie's a world historic figure. And people should really go to Leslie's work. Transgender Warrior is a historical Marxist analysis of the rise of binary gender in the world.
Wow.
And online at lesliefeinberg.net, just lesliefeinberg.net, people who are looking for her classic multi-gender novel, Stone Butch Blues, can download a copy for free.
We will. We will. And now we would like to download you. Please go back.
I know.
We're just algorithms at the end of this. So let's go back into this book, Magnified. Oh, my. The last poem you read was accompanied by a photograph of water that can just take your breath away. Now, did she take all these photographs?
No, you know, the graphic of the water, I'm not really sure where that came from. They may have lifted it from the photograph. They may have lifted a ripple from the photograph, which I think is very possible.
Okay.
But there is water all through. I'll read the title poem of the book now, which isn't specifically about the water, but it is called Magnified. And it's about the porch here on the house that the apartment that we lived in Syracuse, where Leslie had to move. I had to move Leslie when she got so much sicker. I was teaching up here. So this is called Magnified. I bend over the cobbled verge, the used for nothing now edge, except to make the little glints insignificant that catch my eye. The first flowers, smaller than this S, smaller than this word, pink jaws, blue bow, white knives. And if I had my pocket lens to swivel out and magnify what I could see, then I would see us. Inside the quiet rooms you almost never leave now, us bending over the table, touching the painted wooden eggs you gave me last spring. The white seed dots, the cross-hatched grass, gold and yellow, the outstretched bloom embossed on red, blue, yellow, green. You and me, rolling the spring back and forth in our hands. The silver mist outside, the next day we can't see inside. And, you know, you asked me about getting close to death. I think that one reason that is true in this book is that, and everyone who's lived close to death knows this, is that you're not close to death all the time. You're close to life all the time that you're being close to death. But usually people don't notice that.
Keep talking about that.
Well, you know, when you know someone is close to dying or they might die, and Leslie was very close to it for a long time. Mm. We talked about death all the time, all the time. We talked about it, and, you know, she first got really sick about 4 years after we were together, and we started to talk about it then. Things that people don't usually talk about, you know, like the will, and then what about the children, and, you know, but other things too, you know, deeper things. And
You don't stop living
because you know there's death there. And most people don't think about how close death is.
Do you think you were closer then than ever before?
To death?
To each other.
Well, it made us closer. Mm. It you know, the situation that one lives in is what creates one.
Well, the relationship to the world that we see in this book, your detail, you're noticing the every flower, the way the snow crunches under your feet. You know, this is something to teach. This is something to teach poets, this book. It is so crystalline that you must have been just burned pure. That's all I can think of it. Those last 4 years, you were just burned to the core, so that you saw everything very clearly.
Yeah, that's right, Grace. I mean, when you come that close to death, step by step, year after year, and it's you and the other person that you love more than yourself, really, right? Everything comes into focus in its proper perspective.
We can love someone more than we love ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I mean,
my children.
Yes. Think of the people. Yeah. And, you know, history is full of stories of people who sacrifice themselves.
Of course.
You know.
Well, the book says it all, and we're going to hear more from it. Give us two more together. When I was rereading this book, I thought, you know what, I wish I could just get her and to start and let her read the whole book, just cover to cover. That's what I really would love.
Maybe I should just tape the whole thing.
Why don't you make a CD?
Yeah, or something just to put online so people can listen.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're doing our part now, Grace. I'm going to read two more that sort of go together. So this is about how wildly in love we were in the middle of it all. I took walks around the neighborhood, as I told you, and I ran into some crabapple trees on the way, and this is the poem that happened. It's called Lit. The person we were, the people we were, the people we are now. The apple blossoms blown, flowers fallen, blight biting into every leaf, skin scaling on the trunk and branches, skeletal shadows on the walk. As I pass, grieving and loving this bony, brittle world that breaks and opens day after day. The bees gnawing at the red-hearted rose of Sharon, licked, sticky all over from flower tongues, pollen bristle, until it's hard to tell the flower from the bee, the insect from the tree, me from you, you from me.
Mm.
And then this one, which is about another really happy moment. The moon reading. The moon looks into our bedroom window at us sometimes. As I lie down beside you, she pulls a silvery sheet over us and then retreats to her silent nighttime reading, east to west. Night after night, that bright gaze moves over us, lying under the comfort of being watched over. The round, illuminated magnifying glass in Mama's hands as she passed into dementia and understood less and less, her anxious eyes reading the same line over and over. The moon that shone in my window when I was little and supposed to have religion, so I knelt and prayed to that light because she looked back at me. Everything earthly and imperfect changes under the moon. In this moment beside you, I am perfectly happy, lying in the moon's light, drifting slowly with you into an illegible sleep.
Illegible sleep. Are you still managing a newspaper or contributing to Workers' World?
I am. I'm one of five managing editors. We rotate, thank goodness. Otherwise, I'd be doing it every week and it would be too much for me. It's collective work. No one gets paid. We do it for the world. And if people want to look at some of the coverage, like this week, I wrote with some other people a roundup on the Amazon and Starbucks organizing. The Amazon warehouse organizing and the Starbucks coffee house organizing, which I just want everybody to know, the first Amazon warehouse that declared it was going to try to become a union was in Bessemer, Alabama. Bessemer, Alabama. And I have a poem that I wrote in 2009 about keeping your eye on the people at the Bessemer rummage sale that was where people went to find, you know, little bargains. Keep an eye on them, I said in this poem.
Go to
workers.org if you want to see the roundup. It's a really good roundup, has great pictures, and it'll make you feel really good.
I will definitely do that. I want to feel good.
Yeah.
Before we hear a final poem, what do you think Leslie felt about her life's work? She began one place, she ended another place. Looking at the span of what she produced, do you think she felt good about it?
I know that she had known from a very early age what question it was she was trying to figure out. From a very early age, like she was a very masculine girl, and she was very mistreated because of that, like trans people are. And she set out to figure out why.
Mm.
And she did. She did figure that out. And she wrote about it extensively in many different ways. And I believe that she felt, I can't say what she felt at the end, but I know that she did what she had set out to do. And I also know that if she had had the strength, there would have been other things she would have done. But.
Well, I just want everyone to know that we're going to follow her work so that it never dies. And I want everyone to know that art does matter and that art does make changes and that art does make things happen. And to prove it, here's your final poem, Minnie, Bruce Pratt.
So in that spirit, this is called The Forward. How we have to go over and over things, repeat, beaten path, repeat to bury or uncover. The same story told to the same person again, again, again. Yet another of these poems about death. Yes, again, survival by repetition. The effort behind the smell of cut grass, the swing back, the push, the crisscross of dying blades. You and me, lying down on the grass after that long, hot march, hand in hand on the cool ground, and then pain, our muscles seized to the bone. We almost can't get up, but we do. Pain and the body's memory, the going on of all the other marches, the forward.
Oh, I love you, Minnie Bruce Pratt, and I love your poetry. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funders are the Sinipet Fund, Natalie Canavore, and Sandy Jackson Cohen. I am Grace Cavalieri, and our engineer is Mike Turpin.